from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've heard the saying, everybody's going to end up being on television, in this country at least. Well, today, this broadcast originates from a place where it looks like everybody's on the radio. Your host is headquartered today, though the Show Dome has moved to the New York headquarters of Sirius Satellite Radio, and you just walk down a hallway, and every room you look in, there's a guy talking to, I don't know who he's talking to, maybe somebody, but he's on the radio. It just looks like a world full of people on the radio. Anyway, speaking of radio, which is the medium, last time I looked, this broadcast is carried on, welcome to a new Le Show affiliate joining today, WAMC. Welcome aboard. You've missed so much, and yet we're going to catch you right up, so don't worry about a thing. Ladies and gentlemen, first off, you know, the nutty thing about moral clarity is that it, too, can go fuzzy. In his best-selling anthology, The Book of Virtues, William J. Bennett writes, quote, "We should know that too much of anything, even a good thing, may prove to be our undoing. We need to set definite boundaries on our appetites," unquote. Now, you knew right there, if you ever read that or heard that read to you before, that there's a fuzziness to that man's moral clarity because of his, shall we put it en français, his beaucoup d'avoirdupois, whatever else his proclivities might be. But now we know what else his proclivities might be. The moral vicar, the self-appointed moral vicar, and appointed by me most dangerous man in America because of the number of nonviolent offenders doing hard time while rapists and murderers went free to make jail space for them when he was drug czar. He's a gambler. He's betting millions of dollars over the last decade. His game of choice, this is the saddest thing in the world, ladies and gentlemen. This is even sadder than just the fact that he's a gambling addict. His games of choice, according to Newsweek magazine, video poker and slot machines. He is a man of the people. You don't have to go to Vegas to do that, Bill. Have you ever heard the two words, babe? Truck stop. Some at $500 a pull. Where do you find a $500 video poker machine? Ask Bill Bennett. With a revolving line of credit of at least $200,000 at each casino, that would explain why he goes to Vegas. Not a truck stop. It's not a cash deal, so he doesn't have to bring money. More than 40 pages of internal casino documents provided to the Washington Monthly and Newsweek magazine paint a picture of a gambler given the high roller treatment, including limos and tens of thousands of dollars in comp, hotel rooms, and other amenities. I bet there's some meals thrown in there. Some big meals. He wired more than $1.4 million to cover losses at one casino. In one 18-month stretch, Bennett visited a number of casinos for 2 or 3 days at a time. And to prevent anybody from finding out, the customer profile at one casino lists his address, the address of empower.org, the website of Empower America, the group that he co-chairs, typed across the form are the words, "No contact at res or biz." No contact, ladies and gentlemen, at res or biz. Reached by Newsweek, Bennett acknowledges he gambles, but not that he has ever ended up behind. "Over 10 years, I'd say I've come out pretty close to even." Although one casino source says on July 12th of last year, he lost $340,000 at Caesars in Atlantic City. On April 5th and 6th of this year, he lost more than $500,000 at the Bellagio. Some casino estimates put his total losses over the past decade at more than $8 million. There's a term in the trade for his kind of gambler, says a casino source who has witnessed Bennett at the high-limit slots. "We call them losers," unquote. Fuzzy moral clarity, ladies and gentlemen. Watch out for it. Moral clarity can come and bite you in the hiney when everyone, I guess, who's watching most expects it. Now to the topic of today, which is a look back. The war's over. President Bush didn't declare the end to the war, because that, of course, would mean we'd have to release the prisoners and couldn't grill them anymore. But the end to combat stage of the war. Now we're at the green room stage of the war? I don't know. But you probably saw the photo op on Thursday, President Bush top-gunning it onto the deck of an aircraft carrier, tail-hooking it onto the deck of an aircraft carrier. Women, ladies, don't get offended. I don't mean that. In an aircraft. The carrier, of course, the Abraham Lincoln steaming, term of art, steaming towards port in San Diego, had to be turned around to go farther away from home port to make a better picture, because otherwise it would be Bush against the San Diego skyline. You know, no slam on the San Diego skyline, but excuse me. And he was well within helicoptering range of the carrier. Of course, if he waited half an hour, he could have stepped on board on a gangplank. He was in gangplank range. But nonetheless, it made a good photo op for him to top gun it in. All that has been covered by a lot of the media, including the BBC. But what I haven't noticed being covered is if you watched that picture. Now, of course, the point of being on an aircraft, you see a lot of these pictures in every administration. The president or the secretary of defense with a bunch of soldiers and or sailors behind him. Now, it's not really in the annals of military history well known as the command position to have your troops behind you. But television changes everything, and nothing looks so commander-in-chief as having a bunch of enlisted men looking at your hiney. Second use of the word hiney on today's broadcast, ladies and gentlemen, for those keeping track. And that's, you know, that's okay, too. I just want somebody to answer this question, because that's all I'm about, is asking questions, ladies and gentlemen. The other radio shows give you answers. Did you see the troops arrayed behind, the sailors arrayed behind him? Since when are sailors on duty, on ship, wearing multicolored, not each shirt multicolored, but an array of T-shirts in glorious springtime colors, bright green, bright yellow, bright orange, bright red, bright blue? It didn't look like he was commander-in-chief. It looked like he was shooting a Benetton commercial. What, I ask, is up with that? Somebody, please. Somebody help me here. Anyway, a look back at the war just over, or is it, on today's edition of Hello, Welcome to the Show.
A high-flying comedy gets grounded. And TV has war plans, too.
It's a special edition of Extra Access tonight for late March of 2003.
Hi, everybody. I'm Mike DeVere.
And I'm Pat Mungo.
It sounded like the movie hit of the summer. A hip urban comedy about a group of aliens that come to Earth to protect America's jetliners. But after three attempted release dates, Attitude Pictures and their distributors have pulled the plug on Sky Martians, which was going to be music star Danny Kaye's passport to movie stardom.
It was some funny shit, because I look like something from the Star Wars bar meets Frankenstein by way of Soul Train, you understand? And there's this fight scene on the plane where this foreign guy keeps trying to clock me with his booby-trapped sneaker while we're going through severe turbulence, you know what I'm saying? And I did my own choreography for that, so yeah, that definitely was some retarded shit in that picture.
For Andy Cullen of Attitude Pictures, putting Sky Martians back on the shelf was no easy choice.
We thought we had a franchise here. I mean, you know, Sky Martians 2, Foreign Guys in Space, that was already in development. We had focus grouped this picture since it was just a concept, and all the way through to the idea stage, the audience never told us that there was anything that scared them or anything like that. Otherwise, you know, I'd have greenlit Nancy, the movie. We've had the rights to that for years.
Test screenings had audiences booing and walking out all at once. Even street guy Danny Kaye was worried.
So my peeps are asking me, dog, what you think of doing a comedy about hijacking planes and shit? And I say, you know, but we're Martians, you know, because that still cracks me up. But they just stare at me like I order a Cosmopolitan or something. So that tells my radar, boom, baby, get under the screen, you understand?
The team still hopes Sky Martians can fly one day. But Danny Kaye is filling the time before his summer tour, creating and starring in a reality game show pilot called Make Me Sick.
If it's wartime, this must be Tuesday. And television programmers are adjusting at a pace that must be stimulating shock and awe in the competition. The Motion Picture Academy decided that the first victim of this war was the red carpet arrival ceremony. leaving Oscar pre-show hostess Joan Rivers dishing her heart out.
I mean, it's a gray carpet. I mean, what are you supposed to do with that? That's for the dignity. I mean, yeah, if they wanted dignity, they should have told Courtney Love to stay home. Okay, she's not really at the Oscars this year. But, I mean, what are we supposed to say as these people arrive? Ah, can you believe that gray suit? Oh my God, those lapels are notched. I mean, you know, it's all right for me. I have a career. But poor Melissa.
Co-executive producer Jamie Mullarkin is making last-minute changes in NBC's hit reality show, Fear Factor.
All the insect-related stunts are out for the duration of the hostilities. We've been banking less disgusting challenges for just a situation like this. This week, the contestants all have to eat sweetbreads. You know, it's still like yick, but it's a classier kind of yick.
On the news side of the networks, the competition heats up in wartime. We talked to CNN's Aaron Brown.
In terms of the people over there, everybody's, you know, sent their A team. So it is really a contest about in the chair next to the anchor who's got the best former generals. And I just happen to think our former generals are top of the line.
Not surprisingly, Dan Rather has a different take on the war, the network war.
Tell you this, CBS News as a gold standard type television news operation has, we've got two mandates that we're crippled critter serious about. Do the best possible electronic journalism about this conflict, real pedal to the metal journalism. And two, make rock solid sure for certain that we don't put the Howard Stern prank caller on the air anymore.
For the networks, there's one thing worth fighting for, and that's viewers.
That's it for now, but Extra Access Tonight comes rolling back next time with the results of our EAT poll.
We asked you what sitcom Saddam Hussein should join as a recurring character, and the results should make Raymond wonder if he wants to be loved by everybody. Till then, I'm Pat Mungo.
And I'm Mike DeVeer.
So long from Culver City.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, let's show copyrighted feature, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Yes, even though we're reviewing the war, time just to review a few of the major apologies this week. First of all, Howell Raines, executive editor of the New York Times, apologized for the plagiarism involved when he fired a 27-year young reporter who had copied most of a story from a San Antonio newspaper. You know, New York Times copying from a San Antonio newspaper is almost as dispiriting as Bill Bennett playing a video poker. Other apologies, President Bush summoned top Republican congressional leaders to the White House for talks this past week, hoping to end infighting and salvage his tax cut package. It was his first face-to-face meeting with Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist since the Tennessee Republican cut a surprise Senate deal to cut the president's tax cut to $350 billion. Says Frist before the White House session, "I apologized. I made a mistake. My goal is to grow the number as high as I possibly can," he added. And a U.S. company which introduced sandals emblazoned with Ganesha images has apologized for hurting the sentiments of the Hindu community. This is from India. The American firm has also promised to withdraw the sandals from stores immediately. The flip-flop, released in April 2003 as a summer product priced at $1,250, had Ganesha motifs all over it. The sandals outraged the sensibilities of Indians in the U.S. Oh, sorry. It's right here. Hundreds voiced their indignation through the website of India Cause, an activist organization, at the audacity of the firm that produced the sandals, American Eagles. According to an India Cause release, the company has tendered an apology. "We will remove these flip-flops from our stores in order to maintain the goodwill and our customer relations with the Hindu community." Earlier, Seattle-based company Sittin' Pretty had come out with an apology for placing images of Hindu gods on toilet seats. And now, ladies and gentlemen, back to a review of the war just passed. A phone call early on between George Bush and George W. Bush.
triumphant eagle. Isn't it a little early for the champagne?
Hey, 41, I think you mean, isn't it a little early for the Bible study hour where we read the verses about victory?
Yeah, of course, that's what... So look, point was...
Point is finally erasing your mistake.
Mm-hmm. Pretty big eraser.
Pretty big pencil.
Thanks, but...
Because 12 years and a few thousand lives, each of which we hold absolutely inviolate, mm-hmm. but the one blot on your presidential heritage is coming to an ignominious end. Don't bother to thank me.
Look, I'm not going to argue that the world's not a better place without Saddam Hussein.
That's a triple negative. Don't follow.
He's a bad guy.
Yeah.
The world is full of bad guys. Sometimes they can be very useful, as in your coalition.
Yeah, see, I know what you're trying to do. You're trying to eat away at my moral clarity. Don't go there and do that.
Eritrea?
Now, Eritrea is a very fine part of the Horn of Africa type group.
No, know where it is.
Yeah.
Not exactly where you'd like to sleep off a college bender in the local holding cell.
Say, no need to live in the past anymore. We're building the future. A few days from now, the new Iraq will be taking shape,
mm-hmm.
and all the static from the armchair generals is going to... Hey, aren't all generals in armchairs?
Yeah, think so. Look, 43, have always really respected your right to take counsel from advisors of your own choosing.
Well, speaking as the man who was chosen by almost half the public to lead this country, I appreciate that.
But it's the future and the new Iraq and such that we got to talk about, if you'd like.
Yeah, look, I've had this conversation with Colin.
Colin is a good man.
I'm going to fly to northern blessed Ireland, for goodness sake, to have this very conversation with the Blair Bear.
Yeah.
You know, the new Iraq is not going to be turned over to the UN for any more of their irrelevant meddling. The UN can come in and count the silverware and the food for oil program if that floats their boat otherwise.
See, he didn't want to get into all this.
Well,
there's a 50-year history of international relationships built up under both parties, kind of important to a whole bunch of very serious people.
Well, people I talk to are very serious, too.
Yeah,
and you see, 41, I've been reaching out.
Yeah.
I've not only talked to these people, I've been reading their books. So
look, 43, boil it down for you here. You can catch more flies with multilateral arrangements than you can with not.
What do I want with more flies? Hey, 41, you know, the UN is like microwave waffles. It was a good idea, but it just didn't work out. We got to move on.
To what? Laser waffles?
Not bad. See, when I argue this with Colin or Condi, they just lose their sense of humor.
Yeah, wasn't totally kidding there.
Yeah. Still, look, we bought Iraq with our blood and our sacrifice.
Of blood?
Right.
And, of course, with about $75 billion worth
of... Well, that's lowballing, of course.
Yeah.
But anyway, we bought it. We own it. Why would we turn its salvation and its transformation over to a cheese-eating debating society?
No reason we do that.
All right, then.
But don't your intelligence briefings tell you that we're lighting matches in the most explosive kindling in the world, Arab public opinion?
Well, they're not using that kind of colorful verbiage, but yeah.
And don't they suggest that a small American footprint in the new Iraq is the only way we have left to...
The only water we can pour on that kindling?
Sure. Fine.
Yeah, you know, 41, and don't take this personal, but I call it the CYA. I mean, they tell me whatever allows them to, you know, cover their own poop shoots.
For the Catholic Youth Association?
Now you are kidding.
Now I am. To mask the hurt. I'm serious. I'm serious enough to use the first person pronoun, singular.
41. You know, this isn't a fight.
Yeah.
I'm standing on your shoulders. I'm building the new world order you talked about, only it's got a simpler management chart.
Just worried that You're only listening to the choir.
Oh, as if sitting in meetings with Don Rumsfeld is a day at the races. You know what he calls me in classified meetings?
Mm.
He calls me Marge Schott.
The woman who used to own a baseball team?
Mm-hmm. Cincinnati Reds. Mm. Originally the Red Stockings, then of course they became the Red Legs during the McCarthy thing.
Look, you are getting Reagan-esque. He used to fend me off with trivia about life on the Warner's lot.
Hey, 41. What good is it to be the most powerful nation on Earth if we can't act like it?
Don't know, but think we're going to find out. Give my love to Laura.
Yeah, I will. Call anytime. Really. Bye-bye.
I'll say hello to Mom.
Thought it was a little odd to be voting on the side of Uncle Sam. Got a call from the chief, offered serious relief. Said if you feel weird, just be glad that you're not Iran. Oh, when Bush comes to shove, he'll rain death from above.
Chris, is that ready? What do I push to put it on the air? I know I should have read the manual. I'm just saying, what do I... Okay. We have on our newsmaker line right now from... It says Baghdad. All right, Baghdad, Iraq. From our new... Or somewhere in or near there, a gentleman who was asked to be identified only as Shab Shab.
Hello.
And who claims to be, and we've checked this out. We called him back at his number... one of Saddam Hussein's lookalikes. Shab Shab, welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you very much. It's good to talk to you.
I'm pleased to talk to you, sir.
Thank you.
As I understand it, you are one of Saddam Hussein's lookalikes.
That's
correct.
Is
that actually your job or something that you do as a hobby or what?
Well, you have to understand, in Iraq, there are no hobbies. It's a desert. There's no fly fishing, no golf.
Yeah.
Bowling is unknown here.
I would have...
So, yes, it's something I do.
Mm-hmm.
It is not my full-time moneymaker.
What?
For that,
yeah.
I have an electronics store.
Mm.
We can get you into Derby 5-1 for a, what is in these conditions a very attractive price point.
Uh-huh. So, you specialize in high end?
No, all frequencies.
No, I mean in terms of high end of the line of audio equipment.
There's no point in selling the cheap Korean crap here. No one could afford it.
All right. So, Shab, is Shab Shab your first name, or is it Mr. Shab Shab? How do I...
I think if you just say Shab Shab, we're all better off.
Okay, better off is good.
Yes.
Shab Shab, how did you come... Who noticed that you are... First of all, how much do you look like Saddam Hussein? I mean, do you have the mole or not?
Yes, I have the birthmark, what you'd call the mole.
The mole.
Saddam has had it removed, and it's considering having it removed. We were in talks. They broke down in the face of the current circumstances.
Right.
So right now I don't work because I have the birthmark and he does not.
Wow. I'd invest in the surgery and figure I'd make it up on the bookings.
No,
but how actually busy were you when you were working at Saddam Hussein's lookalike? I mean, how many appearances would you make a week?
Well, it depends what season it was in.
What do you mean, like spring?
It's football season. I appear at home games of teams away from a presidential box.
Uh-huh.
Many of those.
I see. So and by football, you mean soccer.
In the interval,
yes.
The mascot would come and shoot balloons at me comically, and the crowd laughs, and it's good fun for all.
Yeah, in Iraq, just because you mentioned it, do the mascots, what are they, in bird costumes?
No.
Chicken suits?
No. In Iraq, of course, no freedom to choose what your mascot will be representing. It. Everyone is in Saddam Hussein suit.
Ah.
So I'm a Saddam Hussein lookalike being comically victimized by mascot dressed as Saddam Hussein.
Wow, so that's potentially confusing if the mascot was a good enough likeness. What is he, Terry Cloth?
Yeah, he's Terry Cloth. No, he's very cartoonish.
Uh-huh.
I'm very lifelike. It's no confusion.
I see.
Just good fun.
Okay, when we saw that tape the other night of what purported to be Saddam Hussein on the air, do you ever do television appearances?
Yes, I have done several television appearances as Saddam Hussein in the past year.
Mm.
Most recently, opening of a Can't Believe It yogurt store in Basra.
In Basra.
That was on local channel, all the local channels.
Mm.
It's monstrous here.
Yeah, well, four times on TV in the last year, you're ahead of me.
Well,
I guess what I'm trying to gently nudge around to as a subject here, Shab Shab, is when we saw that tape the other night, was that Saddam Hussein? Was that you? Do you know who that was?
I'm not really at liberty to comment on that. Let me just say it wasn't me.
Okay.
Because... as I indicated before, I have the birthmark.
Okay. So, do you know who that was? Do you know if Saddam Hussein is dead or alive? Do they call you and tell you to clear your schedule because there may be an emergency television appearance? Is that the sort of thing that would happen?
I'll be working at the store.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have a customer.
All right.
I'll be demonstrating a Bose system.
A Bose.
Or Kef.
Kef.
Very popular here.
British.
And I'll get a call on my cell phone, and it will be from the palace.
Uh-huh.
And it will be, can you get into the Saddam suit by a certain time?
Yes.
And I'll look at my watch, and I'll say yes.
Yeah, I guess you would, and so they don't tell you what it is, what the appearance is for, whether it's international television or just an opening of a.
No, in my case, I pretty much know because I'm not to be self-effacing or anything, but I'm number 8 or 9 on the list. I know this.
Ah.
So, for international television, it would be
What, number one?
I can't use the name, but number one, number two, number three.
Yeah.
I get these, the appearances he would never make, even if he's okay, which I'm sure he is.
I see. So,
Or would be.
Okay, so...
you know, things are different.
So why, Shop Shop, if I could, why did you call in today if there was no chance that this tape that we've seen all over the world was, in fact, you?
Which
would have been the news value of...
I understand the thrust.
Okay.
It just, I think in coming weeks, months, years, more demand, perhaps, for Saddam looking like outside Iraq.
Ah.
Many agents listen to your broadcast.
Oh, and I'm kind of sorry to have to inform you that probably is another intelligence failure. As far as I know, no agents listen to this broad. And if they did, I don't know how they would.
Well, let me just say, for a really compelling Saddam Hussein lookalike, Shab Shab, and they can get in touch with you.
Well, all right.
And if you are in the market for a great tube preamp.
Well, no, I'm
which such a warm,
warm
sound.
No, I know.
Market here is just dried up for vintage equipment.
No, I can imagine. Well, Shab Shab.
Yeah.
Saddam Hussein impersonator and stereo dealer, thank you so much for calling us on our Newsmaker line today. I'm sure you have plenty to do or plenty to stand by to do.
I'm in the book.
If you know what I mean.
Yes.
So best of luck to you, sir.
Thank you
for handing us our very first wartime exclusive here on Le Show.
We continue reviewing the war moments from now here on Le Show.
Here.
getting nostalgic about the war on today's edition of Le Show.
CNN coverage of the war in Iraq continues with a special edition of Larry King Live. Now, here's Larry King Live.
We're in Lexington, Kentucky tonight, where I'll be emceeing the Mint Julep Ball for the benefit of the Pulmonary Edema Foundation Monday night. Coming up next hour, our own Aaron Brown discusses his anxieties about the war with Dr. Phil. But right now, in a Los Angeles studio, an old friend of Larry King Live, even though he's young enough to be my son from my fifth marriage. He first hit the spotlight with the boy band Boys R Us. He's been on his own now for a couple of years, building a solo career. And he's with us tonight because, well, he's going to tell us why he's here tonight. That's why he's here. The fabulous Dewey Gordon.
Good evening, Larry. Thanks for having me back. Yeah. I know it's wartime, and I'm no general or journalist or anything.
Well, Dewey, I think people want to know about the effect of the war on the ordinary celebrity even more.
Well, I hope so, Larry. Yeah. As you know, I don't think an artist has to keep his heart off his sleeve all the time. I think you remember I was involved in the whole post 9/11 patriotism thing before it was even a bandwagon. So
no, your song "Where's Your Flag" was topping the charts right up till the promotion money ran out.
That's right. But I haven't felt, Larry, as an artist and as a person of the human persuasion, that it's my job to inject my opinion about the war in Iraq into this very, very tense atmosphere. You know, my job was to finish my new record, A Kick in the Heart, and just to get it out to the people.
The record's out this week?
Next week.
Okay, and you're going to do a song from it here tonight? I didn't think we were doing that during the war.
No, and I appreciate that policy, too. No, Larry, I only wish I were here to lip-sync a number from the record, but frankly, I'm a little scared about what's going on, and I just wanted to share that fear with your viewers.
Yeah, is this about the fear of traveling with the terrorism and the virus and the cutbacks?
No, sure, Larry. You know that... Janine Garofalo and the Dixie Chicks and Tim Robbins, you know, they've been concerned that there might be a blowback effect on their careers from coming out publicly against the war.
Susan Sarandon's going to be on our show Tuesday night, a whole panel of successful actresses over 40.
That sounds great. But by the same token, you know, we've had some folks, the great Phil Hendry, the radio host here in Hollywood, concerned that his public pro-war stance might endanger his new NBC pilot.
I hear it's a funny show. I read that in my column.
So we know it might be going both ways, this very un-American intolerance of an opposing view. But, Larry, sir, here's what I'm feeling, that my very refusal to take a public position may be boomeranging back on my career and on the reception of my new album.
You mean radio stations are boycotting it?
Well, we don't know that for sure. It's a little hard to measure because they were kind of cool about the last release as well. But we're hearing some things.
Yeah, some chatter?
Exactly. Yeah. And it suggests that, you know, certain people in the industry think I'm being unpatriotic or cowardly or something because I'm not taking a stand.
Dewey, is it that you don't got an opinion on the war, or you do, but you don't want to reveal it yet? Or, you know, what?
As I say, Larry, I don't think it's my job to, you know, weigh in on all that. My job, if you'll pardon my French, is just to make a lot of female booties break out in a cold sweat.
And you don't think as a citizen and a beloved public figure you have a responsibility to have an opinion, you know, good or bad?
I really don't. I mean, this is America, Larry. A lot of young guys, braver and better looking than me, have fought and died for our right to not have an opinion. You know, if we start making people afraid to not speak out, I hate to say it, but the terrorists have won.
Yeah. Well, Dewey, what does your record company think?
Well, as you know, Larry, recording executives are some of the smartest, most passionate people around. They're going to support me no matter what I do, as long as I move units. But there's just so much they can do, you know, because of the RICO statutes.
No, sure, their hands are tied.
Because, you know, I had a series that was being very seriously looked at the USA Network. It's EMR, Emergency Medical Rescue. I'm a paramedic who's in extreme sports.
And you think that's in trouble now because of your non-stand?
Well, all I know is it's weird. You know, we were talking to these people for months, and suddenly nothing.
These are television executives you're talking about?
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's weird. Mm. So, who knows, but I just wanted to go public about all this to say to my fans, what we've had is bigger than any war, and I hope they're not going to hold my stand about not taking a stand against me, and not only me, but all the hundreds of artists and craftsmen that contributed to this record. Mm. I mean, you know, Larry, I sound good, but I don't sound that good. That takes a lot of help.
Yeah, we're seeing a new humility in the Dewey Gordon of 2003. Some people might say you've grown up.
I hope so, Larry. It's what it's all about.
The great Dewey Gordon in our Los Angeles studio tonight. Next time we have you on the show, Dewey, please come do a song from Kickin' the Heart.
That's a promise, Larry.
Coming up, the great Christian Amanpour about looking your best while you're embedded. We'll be right back.
Larry King Live is brought to you by Archer Manuel Diddley, drugstore to the world.
Yes, it's Le Show, and we're looking back at the old Iraq. And, of course, you got to look forward to the new Iraq right now. This from editor and publisher magazine, the trade publication of journalists. Yes. Journalist Peter Wilson watched as a Los Angeles Times reporter. Imagine that. Oh, no, that's not the whole story. Walked to the driver's window of a destroyed minibus on a central Baghdad bridge. Inside the broken window was the carbonized corpse of the vehicle's driver, its charred arm resting on the window's ledge. Asking a photographer standing nearby to take his photograph, the reporter, Jeffrey Mohan, stood about a foot from the corpse and, with his pen poised over his notebook, asked, quote, "Well, sir, do you have any comment on what has happened to you here?" 30 feet away, behind a cordon of barbed wire, stood about 20 Iraqis watching the American conduct a mock interview with the corpse of the taxi driver, all for a photo opportunity. They may not have understood what Mohan said, but they saw what he was doing, Wilson and two other Western eyewitnesses said. Wilson, who is Europe correspondent for the Australian newspaper, hey, he works for Rupert too, was still shaken by the incident when an editor and publisher reporter spoke to him a day later. What stuck in my mind, he said, was the question, who is he going to show this souvenir photo to? His wife, his kids, his buddies? Mohan, who was embedded with an army unit, later acknowledged that the incident was an ill-conceived, clumsy, and ill-considered attempt at gallows humor. During a telephone interview, he also denied there had been any Iraqis within 80 feet of the bus. So, the tree just fell. Nobody heard it. Los Angeles Times, ladies and gentlemen. Speaking of regrets and apologies of the week, I omitted, inadvertently, my own apology. Because last week on this broadcast, reporting that the White House was going to attempt to depict John Kerry badly in a bad light because, according to a White House spokesman, quote, he looks French, unquote, I said he's something to the effect that he's Irish. Well, of course, he's not Irish. There's been a big flurry about that in the press, especially in the Northeast. And Irish he ain't. Couldn't hurt. The new Iraq, ladies and gentlemen, one more note about the new Iraq. Chief Executive for the Recording Industry Association of America, Hillary Rosen, is helping to draft copyright legislation for the new Iraq, according to an investigative journalist. Under Iraqi copyright legislation passed by the old regime, a copyright lapses 25 years after the death of the author, but no more than 50 years after the publication of the work. That's going to change, thanks to Hillary Rosen, head of the Recording Industry Association of America, the same organization that's now suing college students. So that's, you can look for college students to be sued in the new Iraq, I would guess. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the probably the quote of the war, at least for some, would be the quote by Sergeant Shrumpf. A sergeant was interviewed by a New York Times reporter on the subject of civilian casualties. There were some. There were a lot. You know, Ashley Banfield of MSNBC gave a speech last week saying that American television basically sanitized its war coverage to eliminate all of the civilian casualties, all the horror of the war. Now, there was horror before the war. There was horror during the war. We heard about the pre-war horror. We didn't hear, she said, that much about the horror of the war. She gave this speech in public. Coincidentally, of course, she's had her 10 p.m. show taken away from her. Probably gave her the guts to criticize her employer, don't you think? Anyway, Apropos of civilian casualties, Sergeant Shrump was talking to a New York Times reporter and said, well, you know, we tried to avoid, if there was a military guy around too many civilians, we tried to avoid it, but we dropped some civilians, he said. And then speaking of a specific incident, he said, sorry, but the chick got in the way.
I was deep in hell, but they called it Iraq. I had Arabs at my front. I had Arabs at my back. I was shooting at them. They were shooting at me. It was Gulf War II.
Rockin' Your War. This is Le Show. And a story that came out towards the end of the war as the first inklings of the building of the new Iraq. The necessity for the United States to reconstruct the Iraqi justice system. You know, it was corrupt. It was hand-picked Ba'ath Party members, much like the police force we have back on the streets. But the question was raised, where are we going to get, well, the judges, and even the lawyers for the new Iraqi legal system.
Hello, Cochran.
Johnny, my erstwhile colleague, my quondam brother-in-arms, it's Lee Bailey. How are you, sir?
F. Lee, my golly, I haven't heard from you since you were, yeah. I mean, you know, since the... Since O.J. moved to Florida.
Yes, sir. Many interesting things happen in the Sunshine State. Almost makes you think. And you, sir, you've enjoyed remarkable success in the interim.
Well,
the television shows, the work with Al Sharpton.
Well, I just wanted to see firsthand what the gentleman does to his hair.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that look is far more difficult for an African-American than Dreadlocks are for a white individual.
Well, I'm sure that's true, Johnny, although I had no reason to know why I possessed that degree of certitude.
And, of course, since I got out of the practice of law per se, the consultancy thing has gone through the roof.
Yes, I too got out of the practice of law, Jonathan, as you may well know, but it was at the heavy hand of the federal government, and nothing discourages the potential consultancy client like the whiff of disbarment.
Well, Lee, I was genuinely sorry to hear about that, I've got a lunch with the Frito-Lay people. They're very anxious to make Fritos more ethnically friendly.
I take your meaning, Cochrane, so let me truncate the persiflage and cut to the core of the colloquy.
Please.
Well, I've heard that via the grapevine that there is, or soon will be, a need for lawyers to staff the Iraqi legal system. Have you read an item of such import?
Well, actually, Lee, I have. And, you know, the first thing I thought...
Well, thank you. I appreciate you
hey, Geraldo's over there already. He's got a law degree. He could broadcast live from his own trial.
Uh-huh.
I think that's one of his dreams.
Yeah.
You know, of course, the other one is being in a threesome with Halle Berry and...
Geraldo, as we both know, is a bit of a showboat, and while a touch of showmanship is absolutely essential to maintain the jury in a state of non-somnolence, I don't think you have to surrender completely to Barnum.
H.B.?
P.T.
Oh, I'm sure he's a dynamite arranger, too, but...
The point of the colloquy, Mr. C., is whether you could use your contacts over there to say, in effect, and in essence, I know this Lee Bailey, and the disbarment is valid just for the state of Florida. He'd be a remarkable addition to any new legal team in Baghdad or for a negligible bonus in Basra.
Lee, I have no contacts east of Dar es Salaam. There's no way I can...
Johnny, please, don't give the bootblack a shinola job. I've seen the Iraqis on television, although since the contretemps with the federal juggernaut I've had to do without the dichotomous blessings of cable, but so many of the Iraqis are clearly, as the modern phrase has it, people of color. They're third world, even though they seem to have more cars per capita than the southwestern quadrant of Miami. Uh-huh. And by the same token, our prisons are filled to overflowing with fellows of a Muslim persuasion, a goodly number of them defended by yourself and or members of your firm.
Lee, what are you looking for? Private practice? Prosecuting attorney? Civil? I wouldn't think there'd be a market for that yet, but... you know, maybe you could be Iraq's first tobacco lawyer.
Johnny, without adumbrating an unnecessary cohort of indicia of desperation, let me just say, whatever you can do, brother, it will be appreciated, not to say reciprocated on the extremely unlikely occasion that our positions are reversed.
Oh, hey, you never know. I mean, look what happened to Nancy Grace.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see what I can do, Lee, and I'll have Cherie in my office get back to you.
All right.
Do you ever talk to Juice?
He calls me when he's trying to sober up. He sounds nostalgic for the old days.
The football?
The first trial. Anyway, Johnny, I look forward to hearing your tidings. But be of good cheer, sir.
Oh, I am. You take care, Lee.
You too, sir.
You know, ladies and gentlemen, we heard during the war so much about how different the media landscapes were in the United States and abroad in terms of, as I said, coverage of civilian casualties and other things. But this puts a fine point on it. It's from the East Malaysia Daily Express. China may be adamantly against a U.S.-led war in Iraq, but the Chinese state-owned media companies have cheerfully capitalized on surging advertising revenue as companies race to place ads during television broadcasts from the battle zone. This contrasts nicely with American advertisers who stayed away for more coverage. With more than 400 million Chinese said to be glued to their television sets, watching developments unfold in Iraq, state media conglomerates broadcasting live daily coverage of the war have been rewarded with soaring advertising revenues. They're not like us. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude our look back at the war. Next week, we either look ahead or we look on either side of us. No way to know until you join me next week on this same edition, on this same station, on NPR Worldwide throughout Europe, on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America on the giant shortwave transmitter of WBCQ The Planet at 7.415 megahertz, across North America via Sirius Satellite Radio, and around the world whenever you want to hear it at two different locations, www.kcrw.com and www.harryshearer.com. And it'll be just like keeping your moral clarity unfuzzy if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All right. Thank you very much. All right. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net to subscribe to the occasional email newsletter from this broadcast. We don't sell or give away your name. Write to LeBlast, L-E-B-L-A-S-T, dash subscribe at LuxMedia, L-U-X-Media, .com. The show internet services by Steve Mack. My thanks to Jake here at Sirius Satellite Radio for making today's show almost easy. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.